Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Murder Mile, a true crime podcast, an audio-guided walk featuring many of London's untold, unsolved, and long-forgotten murders, all set within and beyond the West End. Today's episode is the final part about the murder of Peter Fasoli, a lonely man who let a stranger into his life, only to be tortured, suffocated, and left to die inside his burning bungalow. His killer had fled, believing he had covered his tracks, but he had left behind an eyewitness. Murder Mile is researched using authentic sources. It contains moments of satire, shock, and grisly details, and as a dramatization of the real events, it may also feature loud and realistic sounds. So that, no matter where you listen to this podcast, you'll feel like you're actually there. My name is Peter lay slumped, hidden in a dark recess between the side of the bed and the back of the brown sofa. Helpless, motionless, and unable to scream, move, or even breathe. With his wrists and ankles hogtied by adhesive tape, his oxygen-starved face deformed by thick layers of tightly wrapped cling film, and his last gasp of breath suffocated by a plastic carrier bag, Peter was dying a slow and painful death. Described as a good man who would help anyone with anything, Peter didn't have an ounce of hatred in his heart or a cruel thought in his head, as all he ever wanted was to be loved. And yet, given that his date had arrived with a bottle of flammable liquid stashed in his rucksack, it's clear that Peter's death was decided before the torture, the foreplay, the chat, and even before he had opened the door. Peter was alive, but unconscious, as the accelerant was splashed upon his bare flesh. And although dotted with red raw holes, where searing cigarette tips had singed his skin, ignited by his killer as he callously walked away, the hot propellant engulfed his body as his skin, hair, and bindings burned and smoked. The fire was started at 12:41 a.m. precisely. An alarm activated within seconds. And at 12:43 a.m, seeing smoke pouring from the little bungalow, several neighbours called 999. Alerted at 12:44 a.m, three crews from the Northolt Fire Station at Pett's Hill sped the 2 mile route in less than 5 minutes and arrived at 12:49 a.m, just 8 minutes after the fire had begun. Three appliances and two ambulances blocked the L-shaped kink of Rubens Road. Unable to gain entry to the white door by the little stone path, firefighters used the jaws of life to pry open a double-glazed window. Found alive but unresponsive, Peter's blackened body was dragged from the burning building. But on arrival at Hillingdon Hospital, he was pronounced dead. Peter was 58 years old. He never married, he had no children, and he left behind a sister and a nephew. The investigation into Peter's death should have been simple. A naked man, bound with adhesive tape and suffocated with cling film and a plastic bag, was found inside a burning building. Suicide and auto-asphyxia was ruled out, as it would have been impossible for Peter to tie his own hands and ankles behind his back and suffocate himself. Burglary was deemed unlikely, as although Peter's drawers were emptied and almost every wire was pulled out of the back of the bank of computers, there were no signs of a break-in and nothing appeared to have been stolen. As for arson, the fire brigade concluded that there were none of the classic signs of a deliberate fire. There was no ignition source, as the killer had taken the lighter. No evidence of accelerant, as all the fuel had burned off. And owing to an excess of electrical equipment, a faulty appliance seemed more likely. As for there being a second person, only one bowl of cereal was found in the sink. There were no fingerprints, and no one saw a single person enter or exit the bungalow. The neighbours heard no screams, only music. Of the three security cameras watching Peter's door, all three were either broken or its recorder had been damaged in the fire, and there were no other CCTV cameras nearby. And even if it could talk, the only known living entity in that room that night was Peter's budgie, and it was dead. An autopsy found no signs of restraint, as owing to the heat of the blaze, the adhesive tape, the plastic bag, and the cling film had vaporized. So with a little blacking in his lungs and a history of heart problems, his cause of death was attributed to smoke asphyxiation, suggesting he died in his sleep. An inquest was held at the West London Coroner's Court on the 16th of August 2013. With foul play ruled out, and the fire investigators stating that the blaze had been started by a faulty light bulb above his bed, a verdict was returned of accidental death. Over the following year, Peter's bungalow was boarded up with metal sheets. His personal possessions were placed in storage by a family friend. And given its grisly history, nobody wanted to move in to 2 Rubens Road. So in 2015, the building was demolished, and a new build now stands in its place. Taking with it the last physical memory of Peter Fasoli, and the murder was erased forever. Only one witness still remained, and they had seen and heard everything. To cover his tracks, the next morning at 9:33 a.m. precisely, Jason sent Peter a message over Badoo. In short, it read, "Sorry I didn't turn up last night. Felt sick. Meet soon, Gabriel." A few hours later, he sent a second, "You there?" Followed by several more, "Don't ignore me. I said I was sorry. And oh, don't be mean." But receiving no reply, he wrote, "Fine, be like that." And their communication ceased. On Tuesday the 8th of January, barely 30 hours after the murder, Jason purchased a return flight to the Italian capital city of Rome, using Peter's bank card.
as the card hadn't been reported stolen. The purchase was small, and no one was monitoring his bank account. Its use wasn't flagged as suspicious. On Friday the 11th, at 6:50 a.m., an EasyJet flight departed Gatwick Airport, carrying the crazed killer. With no sirens, armed police, or roadblocks, just a cursory grunt and a glare by an immigration official, Jason was welcomed into Italy. Being half Italian, he blended in amongst the city's revelers of the arty district of Prati, where he lived off his victim's money and partied like a man without a care in the world. For at least a week, his pathetic little life was good. But once the money was gone, the fun stopped. Like many millions, the anonymity of hiding behind a pen name, a cherry-picked profile, and a carefully chosen photo lets them hide their inadequacies, casually chat, and just like Peter, log out when they got bored. But for one man, Badoo wasn't just a dating website. It was a hunting ground full of sad, lonely men. Jason didn't need to prowl the streets to find the perfect victim, as with so many men vying for love, all he had to do was click. Unwittingly, they had packed all of their profiles full of details to make his hunt a lot simpler. Their age, size, height, and weight, letting him select an older, smaller male who wouldn't put up a fight. Their status, a quiet singleton who lived alone. Their lifestyle, a man with a disposable income. And more importantly, their sexual preferences, allowing him to choose a submissive male into S&M, bondage, and roleplay, who was eager to fulfill a young man's sadistic fantasy of interrogating a suspect. On Saturday the 26th of January, 20 days after Peter's murder, 67-year-old Vincenzo Yale, a retired tour guide and divorced father of one, welcomed a stranger into his home, who went by the alias of Gabriel. Situated on a quiet side street, in the sleepy seaside town of Torvianica Alta, Vincenzo's home consisted of a two-story box-like building with white walls and brown ceramic roof tiles. But as a security-conscious man, its sturdy gate could only be accessed by a buzzer or a keypad. At 7 p.m, their date began, as any interaction between two strangers would.
Hi, I'm Gabriel. Well, Jason really. Hello. Hello, I'm Vincenzo. Nice to meet you. In person. Ah, yes, in person, finally.
Possibly followed by,
please come in. Shall I take my shoes off? No, that's fine.
As well as a few casual pleasantries about his journey, the sea, the weather, and Vincenzo's home. With a romantic mood set by soft lighting and classical music, the two men chatted. Standing briefly, Jason removed his jacket to reveal an ill-conceived uniform of an MI5 agent. This time, on assignment at the British Embassy, with blue jeans, a woolly hat, a smutty t-shirt, a Nokia mobile, a homemade ID, and a utility belt full of all kinds of childish crap, such as kitchen gloves, plastic handcuffs, and a toy gun. Only this time, along with his hunting knife, he carried a truncheon and a can of pepper spray, all of which were real. With the sexy chit-chat having stalled, Jason Marshall, MI5 agent, informed Vincenzo Ialli of Weimar del Corrale that he was under arrest for being a spy. Smiling, Vincenzo willingly stripped. He was gagged and hogtied with adhesive tape, and the two men engaged in sex. Only this fantasy roleplay was about to get very real, very quick.
I want your PIN number,
Jason screamed, as the red-hot tip of a cigarette seared his victim's flesh.
I want your PIN,
he wailed, raining down blows upon his body with an inch-thick truncheon.
Your PIN,
he spat, blinding his bound and muffled hostage with pepper spray, until he relented, gasping for air. And with that, Jason went shopping and returned a whole 400 euros richer. To fabricate a burglary, he upended shelves and ransacked cupboards. But bafflingly, he didn't make it look like a break-in, and he stole nothing of any value. Just a cash card, the electronic key to the gate, the laptop's hard drive, as if to erase any trace of their history, and Vincenzo's second-hand Fiat. But now, with the roleplay having ended and the date having soured, their brief friendship was over. The Badoo killer had no use for his only witness. Yanking an electric flex from the bedside light and wrapping it tightly around Vincenzo's neck, Jason stretched the cord wide, his knee buried in the arched back of his hogtied hostage, until his face turned blue and his body went limp. Lying there, alive but unconscious, Jason plunged his 8-inch hunting knife into Vincenzo's chest, and slamming it down 4 times, the cold steel penetrated his ribs, his lungs, his back, and even the carpet below. And like the angel Gabriel himself, standing over the body, he administered the last rites.
In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. I am the resurrection and the life.
And with no fire, no smoke, and no alarm to quicken his step, as calmly as when he had entered, Jason left Tor Vianica Alta, never to return. It wasn't until 1 week later that Vincenzo's body was discovered. But by then, Jason was flat broke, desperate, and was seeking a third victim. His name was Umberto Gismondi, a little lonely Italian man of modest means, who lived alone and was a submissive into S&M bondage and roleplay. Only this time, the police were watching. Having found Vincenzo's mobile beside his body, the chat on Badoo had led to an unknown male known only as Gabriel. Tracking the withdrawals from the stolen cash card and the direction of the stolen Fiat, Jason was being tailed by a police surveillance team. On Thursday the 21st of February, at 7 p.m, they saw Umberto Gismondi let a stranger into his home.
Ciao, sono Gabriel e Jason Davello. Ciao, sono Vincenzo. Piacere di concerti. Tipo sono.
From the dark of a blacked-out van, two surveillance officers watched the windows of the little flat in Casal Morena. As inside, two strangers sat and made small talk. Only the night for the watchers was dull. Incredibly dull. As being either too shy to engage in sex so soon, or the kind of man who liked to be loved, Umberto kept Jason at a distance, Together they ate a delightful dinner, sat on the sofa watching television, and occasionally they kissed, but there was no sex. The surveillance had proved fruitless. So when their agonizingly dull shift was finally over, instead of waiting for fresh men to replace them, the officers just left, leaving Umberto alone with Jason. Inside, Jason had grown impatient. With Umberto happy to just sit there and chat, Jason's mission was stymied by a dithering man, and his fraught nerves were about ready to snap. All it took was a single sound. A mocking laugh from Umberto's lips, as he found Jason's tale that he was an MI5 agent idiotic. And rightly, he panned his pathetic uniform and his plastic gun. Furious, Umberto was beaten, kicked, pepper sprayed, battered with a truncheon, and suffocated with cushions. The torture lasted for hours, as Jason dragged him from room to room, beating him senseless. But by then, the police had gone. Bloodied and barely conscious, having given up his pin, Jason was 400 euros richer and had stolen an iPad. But before he could return to dispose of his only witness, having released his gag, Umberto screamed. The neighbours came, police were alerted, the attacker's name was given up, and having tracked the GPS on his mobile to a bus heading south in the suburbs of Rome, at 3:30 a.m, Jason Marshall was arrested. The evidence against him was overwhelming. A stolen car, a key card, and bank cards in the name of Vincenzo Ialli and Umberto Gismondi, as well as a knife, a truncheon, a can of pepper spray, a roll of adhesive tape, a fake uniform, bloodstains, DNA. And having survived the attack, Umberto would prove to be a very credible witness. But for the prosecution, two large problems would emerge. Firstly, Jason claimed that he had no memory of the last 3 months. From November 2012, when he blacked out in an unnamed Scottish forest, to just a few days ago, when he woke up in an Italian psychiatric hospital, drugged and handcuffed to a bed with an armed police guard by his side. Dates of which, coincidentally or not, include him maiming Umberto Gismondi and murdering Vincenzo Ialli. And secondly, sticking with the implausible story that he was an MI5 agent on a mission to arrest spies, and that he was the angel Gabriel on a divine prophecy. With his medical record showing a history of depression, anxiety, a diagnosis of Asperger's, and having been sectioned under the Mental Health Act, he was deemed fit to stand trial, but his heinous crimes would be viewed under diminished responsibility. On the 9th of July 2014, at the Frosinone Court of Assizes, 25-year-old Jason Peter Marshall of Greenwich was found guilty of the murder of Vincenzo Ialli and the attempted murder of Umberto Gismondi. He was sentenced to 16 years in prison, with at least 3 to be spent in psychiatric care. And with the Badoo killer jailed, the case was closed, and his name and crimes were forgotten. Almost. As there was still one eyewitness, yet to speak, who had seen and heard everything. on Saturday the 8th of November 2014. Being close to 2 years since the fire, and 15 months after a coroner's inquest had ruled the death of Peter Fasoli as an accident owing to a faulty light bulb, his nephew, Christopher Murgatroyd, removed Peter's personal possessions from storage. Some were charred, many were damaged, and others were beyond repair. But as part of the grieving process to mourn his beloved uncle, Christopher knew that Peter had been compiling a family tree. Keen to recover the project, he switched on his uncle's laptop, which had survived the inferno. As a neat man, typically, the files on his hard drive were well organized, so it didn't pose a problem to find his research, his reference sources, and a treasure trove of family photos. But one file stood out. It was a large file. A very large file. So large, it took up most of the hard drive. Clicking the video file open, Christopher was confronted by a familiar sight. As filmed using the laptop's webcam by the bank of computers, this fixed shot showed the inside of the little bungalow. His uncle sat in his recliner chair, eating a bowl of cereal, and behind him lay his blue bed and his brown sofa. Initially, it seemed an odd thing to film, a 7-hour recording of him sitting alone, eating his dinner. Only this dull little video was far from remarkable, as although it had no name, its date was unique. Peter had pressed record just before 7 p.m. on Sunday the 6th of January 2013, the evening that he died. At 7 p.m. precisely, having briefly exited the shot, the audio picked up the chat of two socially awkward men.
Jason, really. Hello. Hello, I'm Peter. Nice to meet you.
Rightfully concerned, Christopher spooled through the video and witnessed everything. From the roleplay, to the torture, to the robbery, and the suffocation. With his uncle out of frame, his bound body and his shrink-wrapped head slumped in an oxygen-starved heap behind the sofa. Having said a prayer in Latin, the stranger ransacked the room and yanked out the cables from the bank of computers. And although the video abruptly cut out, the audio kept recording, saving the file to the hard drive and capturing the last moments of Peter's life. The splash of flammable liquid, the click of a lighter, the licking of flames, and the piercing shrill of a fire alarm. Quite why Peter chose to record this is unknown. But with this silent witness finally speaking, a murderer will be brought to justice. With the coroner's inquest reopened, the police had powers to search everything. The hard drive, the phone calls, the bank cards, and the Badoo messages. All of which led to 25-year-old Jason Marshall, a nobody they had never heard of. As well as the fake alibi, the cash withdrawals, the flight to Italy, and his recent conviction for a murder and an attempted murder. Two attacks identical to Peter's. On the 15th of February 2017, having stalled owing to a lot of red tape and a lengthy stint in an Italian psychiatric unit, a European arrest warrant was issued and Jason was arrested on transfer to Heathrow Airport. Tried at the Old Bailey, Jason pleaded not guilty, but his defense of amnesia due to hard drinking was dismissed. As in, not a single piece of footage did he look unsteady, confused, or drunk. And although his mental illness was deemed a factor, the judge made it clear that Jason was to blame for his actions. Judge Hilliard QC said, "You were motivated by a desire to cause Mr. Fasoli pain. You tortured him for so long because you enjoyed it so much. You felt no remorse for what you have done, only pleasure." The jury took just 75 minutes to reach a unanimous verdict. And being found guilty of both charges, Jason Marshall was sentenced to a minimum term of 39 years for the murder of Peter Fasoli. A fresh inquest also overruled the original verdict of accidental death by the coroner's court. But no blame was attached to the police or fire brigade, who admitted that minor oversights had been made. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Murder Mile. That was the final part of The Badoo Killer. And as always, after the break, we have a non-compulsory part of the show for those who like info, idiotic coots, and iced buns. If that sounds awful, switch off now. But before that, here's a promo for a true crime podcast, which may very well be the soft and sweet layer of frangipane, which nestles in the middle of a lovely scrumptious Bakewell tart. Mmm.
This is Edward October. It's Sunday morning and I'm here at a typical American home. But inside, Jen and Cam of our True Crime podcast sit down to record their latest episode. Though Jen and Cam are lifelong friends, they approach true crime with the utmost professionalism. They're focused.
So, what do you?
Highly articulate.
Alachua? Is that how you say it?
Alachua, like Joshua, but Alachua.
Alachua.
You will Alachua onto my...
And above all, compassionate.
Honestly, I debated if I wanted to do this. And in the end, I decided it was important to honor this baby's short life.
Every day, more folks wake up hungry for a true crime podcast. And our true crime podcast is enjoyed best by more people. So whenever you're downloading any podcast of any kind, be sure to download an extra episode of our True Crime Podcast. You'll like them. Available on all your favorite podcatchers or at ourtruecrimepodcast.com.
See this? The mouth? It gets me in trouble.
A big thank you to my new Patreon supporters, who are Kerry Roberts, Jessica Cook, the Lady Juliet Maybank, and Anthony Priddy. I thank you all for supporting the show. It's very much appreciated. Plus a thank you to everyone who has recently left lovely reviews and very kind words for Murder Mile on your favourite podcast app. It's very much appreciated. And it's even better because it acts like a stiff mid-digit to all those nasty people out there who have no lives, hate everything, and get their jollies by pissing on people's chips. Boo to them! Murder Mile was researched, written and performed by myself, with the main musical themes written and performed by Eric Stein and John Books of Cult With No Name. Thank you for listening, and sleep well.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Oy, cripes. Well, it started well. It started well, then it went downhill from there. Of course it did. Of course it did. Hey everyone, welcome to Extra Mile. If you're new to Extra Mile, don't forget this is not the compulsory bit. This is the extra bit. This is not the part of the episode. This is extra. You've listened to the episode. That is the bit you can review. If you like it, great. Give it a 5-star review. If you hate it, give it a 1. That's all fine. Don't review this bit. This is extra. It's not part of the podcast. I find it baffling when people leave little reviews going, I don't really like the second bit, so I've downgraded it. It's like, that's not the podcast. Anyway, today's been a tough one. It's been a tough one. That's why I'm a bit antsy. It started so well. I was flowing really nicely. And even though this episode has some really complicated place names in it and Italian names, and you know, I got my little list in front of me of everything I need to know, and I'd phonetically written things out, and it was all going so well, and then loads of boats going past and some really noisy planes flying over, and then some prick around the corner with an angle grinder. It's early in the morning and he's decided, you know what, I'm going to angle grind everything. Oh, look at that. There's some stone. I'll angle grind that. Oh, look, some metal. I'll angle grind that. Yeah. Oh, what else can I angle grind? What else? And you know what? Now he's stopped. Prick. Anyway, I'm going to let's get rid of my little sound baffler. There we go. I'm going to go and make a cup of tea. I'm going to put on the I say tea. It's obviously coffee. I'm opening up a couple of doors as well, because we need some fresh air in here. Corlummy. What am I going? Coffee or tea? Coffee or tea? I think I need another coffee to freshen me up. Oh. I might have to get myself a nice mug that kind of keeps everything nice and warm for longer, because these ceramic mugs are good, but they all seem to make everything go cold too fast. Might treat myself to something nice. There we go. Coffee in, sugar in, powdered milk in. Even though it's still cold outside, it's still warm in the evenings, it's still freezing. Even though we're way into April now, it's still warm. It's weird. It's like 18, 20 degrees during the day and then nips pervert at night. Anyway, what have we got? Cake-wise, it's been a bugger. I haven't been able to go out and get cake because, this is really annoying, end of the tax year. People who are self-employed know this anyway. We just did end of tax year. So it's that point in the year where you think to yourself, shit, right, let's spend as much money as you can on things that are tax deductible. So I did that, but I've had no money. So I've been broke. So I haven't had any money to go out and cake, so I haven't got any cake. So there we go. Cake choice for the day? None. No cake. Nothing. I haven't even got any nice food. I'm literally going through my cupboards and just eating, which is good. Sometimes it's good to have a clear out, isn't it? I'm all the tin stuff, I'm going, right, do you know, all the rice, I get rid of all that. So that's all going all good. What else are we doing? Neighbour down the road is burning lots of crap. Oh, he has a fire on every day. Even on hot days, he has a fire on. And I don't understand it. And he doesn't burn good wood, like the quality wood that smells nice. When you go past him, that smells nice. He burns the shit. He gets pallets. And I always say to people, you should never, a lot of boaters do this, they get pallets, like wooden pallets, and they chop them up and then they put them in the fire, but you shouldn't do that. Any boaters out there, don't do it, because to make them waterproof, they use various chemicals to make the pallets waterproof, and one of those chemicals is cyanide, of course, and you put that into your fire and you're inhaling cyanide. There's loads of really noxious chemicals out there, and people seem to think, oh, but it's cheap. Also, all the crap that's inside it goes down the side of your boat, and that's why some boats have shit stains, as I like to call it. Oh, put the water in. There we go. That looks good. Whoa. Shit stains is a term that I refer to when people have a chimney down the side of their boat. If they use low quality, or if they burn the fire too low a temperature because they're cheapskates, or they're using shit wood, or like pallet wood, as I'm saying, the smoke doesn't tend to disappear. What it does is it drifts down the side of the boat, which means you end up with a really nasty, horrible stain down the side of the boat. And it looks like your boat has had a big old crap in its pants. It's horrible. Anyway, so that's boats with shit stains. What else is going on? Pubs opened last Monday, beer gardens. First day out, all the dickheads went out. Of course, they all rushed out. Oh no, go have a pint, go have a pint. And I did my little walk and I went past 15 beer gardens. And no one was socially distancing, no one was wearing masks. So it's not going to end well, is it? I think everyone's got their vaccine and they're all like, oh, yeah, I'm cured. It's like, you're not cured. It just, oh, you don't understand what the vaccine does. What it does is stops you getting the severe symptoms, but you can still get the virus and you can still pass it on to other people, which means people who are immune compromised are in a really difficult situation, because dickheads are walking around with no masks going, I don't need to wear a mask anymore, I'm cured. And it's like, no, you can still pass it on to people. Oh. Anyway, I've got my vaccine booked in about 2 weeks. 2 weeks from now, so end of April. So that's in. Looking forward to that. And then the second one scheduled for July, which is good, which means I can get back to doing the tours. That's why I'm waiting. So I was waiting for at least to get my first vaccine in so I can start doing the tours. And I'm going to whiz through all this editing and writing. I'm not going to take any days off. I'm going to try and go back to doing 7 days a week. Instead of taking a nice day off, go back to 7 days a week so I can get myself ahead, so that when I do have my vaccine, that when I do, if I do get sick, the three, because most people say it's normally about 3 days, at least I can afford to take 3 days off and not delay the podcast. See how hard I work to make sure that you get your podcast on time. What else is going on? I had to buy a new bike saddle. This was annoying. I'd spent all my money and I got no money left, and I thought, I hope nothing happens before payday. And then while I was cycling into town, to go and film some stuff for Murder Mile. It was about 30 miles to get into town. 12 miles in, my saddle broke. Literally, I sat on it, it snapped. I went, oh, shit. And I ended up with the horrible metal bit sticking right at me jacksy. It was really unpleasant. So, unfortunately, I went into Evans Bikes, because it's the only place that was open, and they're far too pricey. They're like, like the place around the corner from me, you can get a full service on your bike for about 60 quid, and they do a great job. Evans, 200 quid, and it's like the last service they did was okay. It wasn't great, it was okay. Anyway, I went in there, we went looking for seats, and they got, oh, look, carbon fiber this, oh, racing this. And it's like, oh, piss off, just give me a proper seat. And I had a choice between, I had two that were 30 quid, one that was really, really hard, and another that was what they call a ladies style. So it's, you know, a little bit bigger. Sorry, ladies. But it's very, very, very comfortable. But it weighed a freaking ton. And I was like, oh, God, I don't want the heavy one. So I went for the really light one, which cost 30 quid. And it really hurts my bobo. But I managed to go online and I found myself a lovely, lovely soft seat cover. So that's exciting. So I've just put that on. So I'll be rolling that out this weekend. Very good. I'm just going to throw in here, it's a minute long, it's part of the prerequisite because I'm doing CrimeCon. We've got CrimeCon coming up in September this year, so I'm just going to throw in my pre-recorded advert so I don't have to say the words every time. So I've already pre-purchased my hotel room for when I'm there, so I'm definitely going to be there, and I've picked up my hotel room while it's cheap. So if you want to do the same, do that now. But here's a little advert.
Hello, this is Mike, host of the world-famous Murder Mile UK True Crime Podcast, and widely regarded as the greatest thing to have ever entered a person's ears since time began. And that's a fact. I'm deeply honoured to be part of Podcast Row at CrimeCon UK on the 25th and 26th of September 2021. If you love true crime, please check out my audio doings, cleverly entitled Murder Mile. And should you purchase a ticket and save yourself 1% by using the promo code MILE, you can come and meet me in person. Yes, I'm real. You can touch me, not too much, just a little, and not down there. That's rude. To do so, treat yourself to 2 days of murderously good fun at CrimeCon. See you there.
There you go. It all sounds good. I've got all the information in there, which means I don't have to keep re-recording it. There we go. All good fun. Hope to see you there. It'll all be a bit of a giggle. Right. Let's do the quiz, which, as always, I will point out, I'll probably ruin. Oh, yes. Oh, no, I didn't put in enough sugar. So I'll probably ruin some of this, but let's give it a go. Right. Question number one. What airport did Jason depart from to get to Italy? Oh, clicking my thumb. I fell out of bed and I landed on directly on my thumb about 2 weeks ago. And I thought I'd sprained it, but I don't think I've sprained it. It doesn't seem to have swelled. And it still hurts. And it's still clicky. I suspect I may have fractured it. There we go. Question number two. How long did it take to find Jason guilty at the Old Bailey? I almost gave away the answer then. My brain's not working. It's because that prick who hasn't got the angle grinder has stopped, and that's really annoying me now. Question number three. Vincenzo was killed using what two weapons? Oh, look. Here's the ice cream van. Not even 9 a.m, and the ice cream van is here. Prick. They're all out today. Question four. What did... Oh, don't even get me started. Can Allen River Trust, who haven't announced to everyone that we need to start moving again, but they put it on their website, and I've only just found out, and I'm 3 days over. So apparently they're going around saying, oh, why haven't you all moved? And normally they send an email saying you must move, but what they've done is they put it on the website, and you... Apparently you have to keep checking the website, but I've only just found out and I'm 3 days over already. Bastards. So, yeah, it's time to move the boat, which I was looking forward to do, but I wish they'd bloody told us. So annoying. Jobs worth, so they are. Question four. That wasn't a question. Question four. What did Vincenzo do as a job? Question five. Why was Christopher... Peter's nephew looking at the laptop? Question six. Where in Italy was Peter first arrested? Question seven. What type of car did Vincenzo drive? Question eight. This one's a really difficult one, but good luck with this. Northolt Fire Station is based where? You can't just say Northolt. Question nine. What item did Jason steal from Umberto's flat? And question 10. Where was Peter arrested in England? There you go. We'll do the answers very shortly. Unless I balls them up this week. So I hope you enjoyed last week's episode. I had some fun with the edit on that. What I decided to do was, as I was writing it, I kind of realised that there was... I was leading you down a kind of a route, and I realised that there's two slight red herrings in there, so I deliberately played those up. So if you listen to episode two, I kind of overemphasise the sounds on two things in there. One of which is the security cameras outside Peter's door, because obviously throughout I'm saying, but there was another witness. So I emphasised the cameras outside the door, and then in episode two I go, oh, but they weren't working. And then I also, just for the hell of it, I thought this might be quite fun. I overemphasise the sound of the budgie whenever I'd mention the word witness. So, so hopefully some of you will have gone, hang on, what? The budgie was the witness. No, I was never suggesting that, but I thought it would be a little bit of fun to throw that in. Anyway, that That was where it was. Just to point out in this as well. Oh, I'm going to put this pillow behind my back. That's better. Or, as mentioned in this, don't forget, as we've seen in the Camden Ripper episode, the police can't just go, right, it's a murder investigation, let's kick this off. The problem is that, especially in this case as well, this is a prime example that if the coroner says it's an accidental death, there's nothing they can do. Even if the police believe it's a murder, they can't progress. The case basically collapses. So as much as, you know, it would have been suspicious for them, if you've got the fire brigade saying, no, it's an accidental death, the pathologist says the same, and then the coroner concludes it, they're kind of stuck. So I'm not kind of helping them out with this, but it is kind of a difficult one. When you look at this case, having a look at Jason's back history in there, as mentioned, we've mentioned a couple of times in here about that he said he went into a bit of a spiral out of control. What he said is that when he lost his job as a cleaner at the London Olympics, that he turned to drink and that he was sinking 8 cans of Stella Artois a day. Ugh. And 4 bottles of Jack Daniels, and a half bottle of Jack Daniels a day, which mixed with his mental health medication, and he started to suffer with memory loss because of this. As we've kind of seen, if you look at the CCTV footage, like the footage of when he's going into Peter Fasoli's house, nothing. He's sitting there, he's fine. He's, you know, there's no stumbling, there's no tripping up over words. You know, everything's kind of very normal. You know, he's very focused. So all of this about him going into a kind of a heavy drinking binge is absolute dog shit. He said that he wound up in a Scottish forest in late November 2012. There's no reference to that. No one. He's very vague with those details. There you go. Angle Grinder is back. Prick. I know he's got a job to do, but fuck off somewhere else and do it. When he was in court, he said, I woke up one day strapped to a bed with a cannula in my arm in an Italian hospital. But he says he has a 2 to 3 month gap and he doesn't remember anything, coincidentally, all around the time that he was these murders were taking place, which is very convenient. He would say in court, all I know about the case is from what I've seen on the film, which is the laptop footage, and in the evidence. Seeing the footage, I feel very bad that someone died and it potentially was me. I know it was me there. Someone died at my hands. That's very difficult to deal with mentally. Yeah, whatever. So 9th of July 2014, obviously he was on trial for the murder of Vincenzo Ialli and Umberto Gismondi, or the attempted murder of Umberto Gismondi. That was in the Court of Assizes in Rome, where initially he was sentenced to 22 years, but there was an appeal on the 15th of September the following year, and it was reduced to 16 years. As mentioned, 3 of which to be served in an Italian psychiatric hospital. When he was convicted, he said he felt no remorse whatsoever for the killing. As part of his defence, he said that he was he couldn't remember anything. He said that he was in a drunken killing spree. He said that in court that he was an MI5 agent. He also said in court that he was the Angel Gabriel himself on a mission. And during the Italian proceedings, he also said he claimed there was a male prostitute called Michael, not me, who murdered Vincenzo Ialli in front of him. He also said that he only attacked Umberto Gismondi in self-defense after being sexually abused by him a couple of days before, although there's no evidence to suggest that at all. And as you can see with the surveillance guys, when they're outside, they said it was, you know, quite boring, just two guys sitting down watching telly having a bit of a meal. Peter Fasoli was given a second autopsy when the coroner's inquest was reopened, the pathologist confirmed that asphyxiation had contributed to the death, and although he was still alive but conscious when the fire was started, there was still no evidence of restraints. So it all must have burnt off. If you can appreciate it, it's all plastic, and plastic burns, it turns into gas and it disappears. It doesn't really say how badly Peter was injured. Obviously, petrol was thrown over him. And the fire was contained in and around the bed. So it's, you know, as much as we can kind of criticise it here, it's hard for us to say, you know, if you look at the pictures of the guy, I think if you go onto my blog, you can find them. Do you know the guy who went to go and use the toilet in a lap dancing club, and then those guys set fire to the stairs and he burnt to death in the toilet. They may not be on my blog. They may only be on Patreon. I think I might have saved them just for that. But when you look at the picture, he's inside the toilet. It's almost impossible to see him because the whole room is black and he is in there, but it's hard. And when you see him, you go, oh, shit, he is there. It's really horrific. And he is you can see every feature of him, but he's just pure black. So slurp of coffee. So you can make, you know, I think everyone seems to think that pathologists are made of magic and they can just magic up any information. But you can only go by what you presented. And don't forget, as the police and the fire brigade always say in these situations, when a pathologist gets the body, they're not given it. They're basically told how the body was found. And they're not really led in the direction by the police and the fire brigade. But they're kind of told the situation and then they go searching for certain things. Because you can't search for everything. You know, so obviously you look at this, you go, did the man die in the fire? Yeah. Was he alive at the time? Yeah, we can see that. You know, there's only basic things that you can do. You have to do a certain amount of certain details in the pathology report. If it was a poisoning, they'd search his stomach. If it's fire, you wouldn't search his stomach. You wouldn't test him. You wouldn't give him a toxicology test. You know, there are certain things that you would do and you wouldn't do. So, as mentioned, the extradition of Jason Marshall took absolutely ages because he was being held in an Italian psychiatric hospital, and they needed a European arrest warrant. So this took almost 2 years for police to get this. Also, they needed to prove to the Italian courts that Jason Marshall was almost certainly guilty. Obviously, they got the 6 to 7 hours worth of footage, which pretty much convinced them. He came back into the UK, was arrested, and he appeared at Hendon Magistrates Court on the 16th of February. As mentioned, he was jailed in September 2017 for a minimum of 39 years. That's huge. It doesn't really say, though, whether he was serving the rest of his Italian sentence, whether he went back to Italy to serve the rest of his Italian sentence, or whether he remained in the UK. I'm not really too sure about that. Obviously, in his Old Bailey trial, he used amnesia as before, as mentioned. I'm trying to see what I've got written here. They used a lot of the information that was from his Italian trial, because obviously in his Italian trial, Jason Marshall said that he had no memory of any of the attacks because he was in the grip of an alcohol-fueled depression. He claimed that he came up with this defence case in the Italian trial by using stories from his dream diary he made up with a psychiatrist. He told the jury he lied because his Italian lawyers advised him that he was saying he couldn't remember the attacks was no good as a defence, so he decided to come up with something better. But prosecutors claiming he is using amnesia as an excuse after the video emerged of him suffocating Mr. Fasoli. Sorry, I'm reading ahead. I've marked up some stuff, but I want to make sure that I'm not skipping over some stuff that's really useful. It was the same in the UK court as well. He said that he was MI5. He said he was the angel Gabriel. Even in the Italian trial, he started getting really angry with the judge because the judge wouldn't hurry up. Judge Nicholas Hilliard, QC, who was the judge of the Old Bailey trial, said you didn't tell the truth. Marshall replied, "My lawyer said that it's not a good defense. You have to come up with something better." I told a lie in court in Italy, but I'm not lying now. What else is there? I've lined up some stuff. Hang on. Where's the stuff I've marked up? There it is. So what I do is I try and put everything in, then I mark it up in kind of bold so I know where to come to. Even in court, so this was in court as well, he said, asked by Judge Nicholas Hilliard QC if he had been trying to terrify Mr. Fasoli, Jason Marshall said, "Yes, my lord, with the prospect of torture." Again, he said that he had no remorse. He said, "Yes, as always." No, he was flanked in court by three dock officers. Here we go. Sorry about this. The prosecution said there was an important and fundamental difference between the two trials, and that was the laptop footage, which he could not escape. Jason Marshall said, "I'm not trying to get away from it. I think if I had remembered it, I could come up with something with a much better excuse, but I can't remember." That was almost an answer I gave away then. This is the problem, is that quiz stymies me all the time. I can't be asked to go through all of this blather to edit stuff out just so it doesn't ruin the quiz. I think that's it. The judge's statement. So, sentencing marshal, Justice Hilliard QC said, "I'm sure you were motivated by a desire to cause Mr. Fasoli pain without his consent. You tortured him for so long because you enjoyed it so much. The dominant elements of your motivation for killing Mr. Fasoli were robbery and sadism. I'm sure that you can have felt no remorse whatsoever for what you have done. On the contrary, you derived pleasure from it." Burpees there, sorry. "He tortured his vulnerable victim for a sexual gratification," Judge Nicholas Hilliard said in sentencing. The judge described it as a sadistic killing. I've done that one. I almost repeated myself there. What else we got? I think that's it. I think that's everything on there. There was a fresh inquest on the 29th of October 2019, so not too long ago. Following an inquest into Mr. Fasoli's death at the West London Coroner's Court, a verdict of accidental death was recorded. This was back in 2013. But at the High Court in London on Tuesday, two senior judges quashed the original verdict and ordered that a new inquest must take place. Lawyers acting on behalf of the senior coroner for West London applied to quash the original verdict. Lord Justice Higginbotham, sitting with Mrs. Justice Lambert, said the court concerned quite extraordinary facts. And this is kind of interesting as well. This, if you look at the dates for this, the arrest of Jason Marshall and all everything that's going on here is literally a year before Stephen Port, the Grindr killer, which has a lot of similarities in that as well. Obviously, not as much sadism, but it is kind of, you know, meeting gay men using apps and then luring them back to his flat and using kind of aliases and things like that. So, but obviously I think Stephen Port is the more famous one. Will I be doing Stephen Port on Murder Mile? Nope, because he's East London. Unless I get to the point where I'm going to move and start doing East London stuff. I don't think I will, to be honest, because I think that's the problem. I think that if you give yourself too much rope doing a podcast, you know, what I like is the fact that I have is Soho, primarily, but also West London. And I think what that does is force me to start looking at cases that I would never normally consider and start researching them really deep. Whereas I think if I open myself up and go all of the UK, or if I go all the whole world, it's just laziness. It's like I don't need to do research. Other people have done it. I can, you know, I won't find anything original. And that's what I like, is that, yes, this case has been covered in the press, and this, that's only because, you know, we're in the pandemic. I can't get to the archives. I'm having to use other sources, which is slightly annoying for me. I can't wait to get back to the archives. I've got a list, a huge list of all these cases that have never been covered before, and I want to cover them ASAP, but I can't. Well, the archives are shut, which is really frustrating. But I'm probably not gonna do North London, South London, East London. I think I'm just gonna stick West London for the moment, probably for as long as possible. Because it's interesting, because I think that's what makes Murder Mile different, is the fact that sometimes, like, you get murders on the same street, you get murders in the same houses. Sometimes you get murders, like, in houses immediately opposite each other, and you get the same people coming back. And I think that's what makes it interesting, is you see the same names, the same people, you know, same locations, same mistakes, you know. I think that's what makes it interesting. So, and I think the second I start moving to East London, North London, South London, or outside London, that's when it all goes to shit, I think. That's when it just becomes generic. And I don't want Murder Mile to be generic. I think what makes it interesting is the fact that everything's contained, which is why I keep trying to push us back to Soho and that kind of area, so we can start trawling the same streets. Right. Anyway, that was fun. Cool, let's do the answers to the question. Everyone get ready. Question number one. What airport did Jason depart from to get to Italy? He departed from Gatwick Airport. Question two. How long did it take to find Jason guilty at the Old Bailey? It was 75 minutes. Question three. Vincenzo was killed using what two weapons? It was a hunting knife and an electrical flex. Question four. What did Vincenzo do as a job? He was a retired tour guide. Question five. Why was Christopher, Peter's nephew, looking at his laptop? Peter was doing a family tree. Question six. Where in Italy was Peter first arrested? He was on a bus heading south in the outskirts of Rome. Question seven. What type of car did Vincenzo drive? That was a Fiat. Question eight, which is a difficult one. Northolt Fire Station is based where? And you can't say Northolt. It's based at Petts Hill, which I sometimes do on my little circuit of a walk when I'm in that area. When I move the boat to different areas, I have little circuits and I often go past that fire station. And now I can go past and go, ooh, you investigated the Peter Fazzoli fire. Sort of. Question nine. What item did Jason steal from Umberto's flat? It was an iPad. And question 10. Where was Peter... That's probably ballsed up the question from earlier on. I've written the wrong name. Where was Jason arrested in England? You don't need to answer this question because I probably ballsed it up at the start. So it was, where was Jason arrested in England? That was Heathrow Airport. Too many names. There we go. That's all done. Hope you enjoyed that. That was good fun. We'll be back next week for another episode. I think it's a one-parter next week, I think, unless it all spirals out of control and I turn it into a two-parter. Probably not. I think this is a one-parter. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that. Thank you so much for listening to Murder Mile. It's a pleasure to have you listening, and thank you for sharing it with your friends, and thank you for all the reviews, and I shall look forward to talking to you next week. Have a good week. Be good. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.